Hello and welcome back to Politics and Polls. I'm Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, and this is my co-host and colleague, Sam.
Sam Wong here, professor of neuroscience and molecular biology, and also founder of the Princeton Election Consortium.
Well, believe it or not, even though we're just approaching the one-year mark of President Trump's election, campaigns
seems
and
like
elections
a century.
Are back in the air. A number of off-year gubernatorial elections are capturing a lot of attention in New Jersey, in Virginia, as efforts to get some sense of the temperature out there in the electorate. The Senate election in Alabama will also be important. And there's a lot of discussion right now about what Democrats are going to have to do thinking about 2018, whether they're going to be able to make a huge dent in the Republican majority, possibly turn over control of the House and Senate. We have had a lot of discussions here with guests of all the soul searching in the Democratic Party about what should Democrats be doing right now. Should they be focusing on anti-Trump messages? Should they be focusing on economic messages? Should they continue with some of the social and cultural themes that have been so important to the party over the years? So the stakes feel immense, I think, for many Democrats, and 2018 will have to go well. So rather than just talking about what Democrats should do, we thought that today would be a good opportunity to hear a little bit about what Democrats are doing on the campaign trail. With us is Levi Tilleman, who is a Colorado native, an expert on energy policy and technology policy, who is currently running to be the Democratic candidate for the 6th district in Colorado. Levi has a very interesting background. He was the founder of IRIS Engines, which was a company to try to develop a more efficient engine, an issue that has been very important to him for a long time. He's focused on electric vehicles also as one of the important possible solutions to the challenges of climate change. He served as a policy advisor to the Energy Department during the Obama administration. He is the managing partner at Valence Strategic. He has published a terrific book that I urge all of you to read, which we can talk about a little later. And he has also had commentary in all sorts of newspapers and magazines, from The New Yorker to The Washington Post to The LA Times. His book is called The Great Race, The Global Quest for the Car of the Future, which was published by Simon & Schuster and got terrific reviews. He also speaks many languages, Spanish, Chinese,
languages?
Japanese, and Portuguese, and maybe he'll tell us a little bit more. So, Levi, welcome to Politics and Polls.
Hi, Julian. Thanks for having me. And hi, Sam. How you doing?
All right. That's too many languages.
Sam's impressed by your language skills.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So maybe we can just begin with this big question before we hone in on your campaign. There's this issue that's out there in the air about what Democrats need to do to put together an effective campaign, especially in districts like the 6th that are possible to turn from having a Republican incumbent to having a Democrat in office. And when we've kind of gone over this debate about anti-Trump and about social issues versus economic issues, what are you seeing and what do you feel is the best path for Democrats going into 2018?
Well, first of all, I will say that, Julian, I know that you are incredibly informed on these issues. So I'm going to deign to give my opinion, but I'm very well aware of the fact that I'm giving my opinion to someone who probably knows a lot more about these issues than I do. But what I'm seeing out in the district, and perhaps I should start by explaining the 6th Congressional District, is that people are hungering for some pretty basic principles. They want a country that is more economically equitable. They want a country that is politically equitable, and they want politicians who have integrity and tell the truth. And I think that those three things sum it up, and I can break them down for you in a little bit more detail, piece by piece. But perhaps it's useful to set the landscape a little bit by explaining the demographics of the six congressional district. We are an extraordinarily representative piece of American real estate. If you look at the demographics for college attendance, the demographics for ethnic breakdown, the demographics for income, we are within spitting distance of the U.S. average on so many of these indices. And so I think that the solutions that we need for the six congressional district are really very similar to the solutions that we need for the country as a whole.
Can I ask, Sam is ready to get into your district. You're speaking with a master of how districts are constructed. But I guess I have one other question for you. How did you decide to jump into this race? I mean, one of the stories we're hearing across the country is Democrats finding new voices in the party and finding people who are energized to get involved in what is a very difficult process, running for Congress, let alone to serve in Congress. What motivated you? You were doing great work on energy, serving in all kinds of capacities. You were at New America as well. How'd you decide to make this jump? I want to run for office. I want to give this a shot. I want to represent the 6th District.
Well, I think that there were two things. The first is that I have always been drawn towards public service. And when I was younger, I was actually thinking about three different career paths. I looked very seriously at joining the CIA. I looked at joining the Special Forces. And then I looked at the clean energy space. And I decided that among those three career choices, the one where leadership was most needed and where the challenges were most complicated because you didn't have anyone giving you orders or telling you what your mission was the clean energy space. You know, rather than having a firefight that you could use to resolve a specific situation, you just had an endless series of seemingly insurmountable technical and economic obstacles. And so that's what I jumped into. And I've spent my life as a clean energy entrepreneur, working for the Obama administration as a clean energy and innovation policy advisor, and then writing on these issues, trying to take the narratives of innovation and of policy's role in innovation to a broader audience. So in November, I saw all of the work that I had done over the course of my life threatened, together with so many other things that I care about. And that brings us to the second reason that I decided to jump in. I come from a background of public service. I had two grandparents in my life growing up who were extraordinary examples for me. One of them was a woman named Nancy Dick. She was lieutenant governor here in Colorado, but she came from very, very humble roots. Her husband was killed in a car accident when my father was just 5 years old, and she raised three kids as a single mom, working the front desk at hotels and doing clerical jobs. But when she had an opportunity to serve, she jumped in, and she ended up making a huge difference in our state and providing real leadership and actually becoming the first woman elected to statewide office in Colorado. So she was a huge inspiration for me as a child. And then the other side of my family, I have a very different but in some ways similar story. My grandfather, Tom Lantos, was a Holocaust survivor. He came to the United States as a penniless immigrant and taught college for about 30 years. Then at a certain point, there were some interesting things that had happened in his district. The incumbent had gone down to investigate the Jim Jones cult. He had actually been assassinated. A Republican had won a very, very blue district, and there had been a vicious bloodletting in a Democratic primary that made other Democrats really hesitant to jump into the race. As a result, my grandfather ran for Congress and spent the better part of three decades representing one of the great American cities, San Francisco, and he really dedicated that time to fighting for human rights. So both of these grandparents taught me when I was young, and actually had a close relationship with them, you know, throughout my life until my grandfather passed away, and I still have a close relationship with my grandmother, that we live in a democracy. And if you see something that you don't like in a democracy, you have an option. You can get involved. And the most direct means of involvement is running for office. I think it was that background and that legacy that really pushed me over the edge, because running for Congress is an extraordinarily difficult thing to do. It takes a huge amount of time. It takes a huge amount of money. It's very emotionally challenging. And it is not something to get into lightly. But having that background of public service and being mentored by these two extraordinary individuals who always told me that it is your right and your responsibility, your duty and your privilege to participate in our democratic institutions to the fullest, that was what inspired me to run.
Now, this is a year when there's an enormous outpouring of enthusiasm among Democrats for stopping Trump's agenda and the ways in which he's been moving our country and our democracy. And there's even criticism on the conservative side, on the Republican side, of ways in which we're changing. So there's been this big outpouring of candidates. And I see that in your primary, there appear to be four declared candidates. You're one of four. So there's two attorneys, Aristide and Crow. And there's this pretty colorful guy, Eric Stanger. And I'm curious, exactly, what does the landscape look like when you go and meet people in the 6th District, when you talk to them? What is it that you tell them that's going to tell them that you're the guy who's going to really be the one to go on next November to represent them?
I think part of what I take with me into this race is a background where I'm very comfortable dealing with complexity. So I just talked about my upbringing and my grandparents, but there was another side of my personal history that's very different. I was raised in a lower income Latino neighborhood, very working class. My friends were the children of immigrants and the grandchildren of immigrants. I learned Spanish because if I went over to their houses for dinner, I wanted to understand the conversation around the dinner table. I grew up with the children of school teachers and union members. And so despite the fact that I had these two public servants in my life who really gave me access to a very rarefied view of government, I was also raised in an extremely salt of the earth neighborhood with really good people. And I believe that those are the same kind of people that are living in my district. Actually, a lot of my friends and neighbors have been pushed out into the 6th Congressional District from the Highlands, which is a neighborhood that I used to live in, and now it used to be called the North Side. Now the real estate developers have renamed it the Highlands, and real estate prices have just shot up dramatically. It's gentrified, so the whole thing is completely unrecognizable, and probably half of my friends and neighbors from growing up have been pushed out into suburban neighborhoods where housing costs are much lower. As a result of that, I understand the people of the district better than some of the other people who are running for office. You know, one of the candidates actually lives in Denver, doesn't live in the 6th Congressional District. And another one of the candidates I think is actually a decent guy, and he does have a long history.
Which one's the decent
guy?
District.
his name is David Aristide. He grew up the son of an oncologist, and was actually raised out here in the district. But when the district was very, very different, Aurora used to be a much more suburban neighborhood. It used to be much less diverse than it is today. Now Aurora ranks as about the 30th most diverse city in the entire United States
Oh, really?
Of America,
Oh.
which just you know, if you want to compare, that means that it is more diverse than Chicago, for instance.
So, and now you talk about being good with complexity. Now, I'm just going to put on my dumb hat here and say, I haven't really noticed that complexity is exactly the thing that pays off in American politics right now. So you went to college when you were 15. Turns out so did I. And I don't view myself as being super well suited for politics because I tend to see the complexity. You know, you're you helped your dad invent an engine. You are very active or have worked a lot in the clean energy space. How is that going to work? Like when you run into the buzzsaw of either the primary election, like is that an? I guess that could be an asset in the primary election because Democrats are not put off by complexity. But then you're going to go into the general election. Let's say that happens. You're going to go up against this guy Kaufman. Are we talking Lincoln versus Douglas here? Like what is your vision here of how you're going to win this election, either the primary or the general? I mean, I'm just picking on you because of this whole complexity thing. Like my thought is, okay, a smart guy's going to run for office, but you know, politics ain't beanbag.
You make a good point. And even in the Democratic primary, I think that Democrats, one of our biggest weaknesses is that we like to put labels on people and we embrace the concept of diversity, but sometimes we don't embrace individual diversity to the extent that we should. We have to realize that people come from different backgrounds and people have very different lived experiences, and that we shouldn't judge people based on how they look or one particular element of their background. So you are sort of indicating that some people might have a hard time understanding the complexity of the perspective that I bring to this particular set of challenges. And I think that's really true. And that brings us back to the three issues that I think Democrats really need to focus on like a laser and we need to hammer away at. And those are economic inequality, political inequality, and integrity. And those are the issues that I have really made my rallying cry. And you know, this is a lot of information that I'm sure you're already familiar with, but real wages have barely increased for most Americans since the 1980s. And in Colorado, we have this very interesting situation where our economy is booming. We have unemployment, which is hovering around 2%, but people who live in places like Aurora are not feeling that prosperity because the cost of housing, the cost of healthcare, the cost of education is rising at a rate that they can't keep up with. Their take-home pay is not tracking their cost of living. You know, we still have a third of African-American and Native American children living in poverty. In this particular district, we have a huge population of undocumented workers and their families and dreamers. Almost 100,000 people in my district speak Spanish. And we have a union membership that feels very disenfranchised by the economy of the 21st century. And so the first thing that I think we need to focus on is an economic message that lifts everyone up. And that is a message that is quite simple and speaks to all different categories across the demographic continuum.
And so what are we talking about? Like increasing the minimum wage or protecting healthcare? How does that translate into things that people will say, oh, yeah, that means something to me?
Absolutely. So protecting healthcare is first and foremost because it hurts when your real take-home pay hasn't risen in 30 or 40 years, but it hurts a lot more when that's paired with double-digit healthcare inflation. The second thing that we need to do is we do need a minimum wage, and I think that $15 is an okay start, but that's not an economic program. We need to make sure that people are able to find jobs that pay the equivalent of $25 or $35 an hour. Those jobs are out there in renewable energy, in infrastructure, in many sectors that don't even require a college education. And so we need to make sure that we're able to pair people with those jobs that will provide them with the take-home pay that will allow them to raise a family and live the American dream. Because I think that that is slipping away from too many people in districts like Colorado's 6th. And then the second thing that I would focus on is
let me just stick on that for a second and go back to something Sam said. So those arguments are all very good and they make sense. And then if you're in the general election, the question will be, so you're dealing with inequality and insecurity. Those are a set of very concrete policies that probably would have pretty strong effect on families who benefit. But then on the other side, you have nativism, you have playing to anger, you have the Trump populism, which also seem to have some appeal to the same kinds of families who are struggling. How does a Democrat such as yourself kind of make the case that the policy is better than the anger? How do you do that in actual campaigning?
First of all, I think that we have some wind at our back in the 6th congressional district. We voted for Hillary Clinton by about 9 points in 2016, which means that when you talk about playing to anger, the anger really is against Donald Trump and his Republican enablers. And there is
But Kaufman's been somewhat critical of Trump. So how does that play?
I would say that Kaufman has been an enabler. Kaufman has voted with Trump about 93% of the time. He's tried to play both sides. He has been on board with Trump's agenda the vast majority of the time. But then every once in a while, he'll shoot out a tweet or a press statement that is critical of something specific that Donald Trump has done. But that is not leadership. And we've been playing with a few different slogans for the campaign. One of the ones that I like the best is actually lifted off of a previous presidential campaign, and it's a leader for a change. And the reason that I like that slogan is because Kaufman is not a leader. Kaufman is a follower. And I sometimes joke that when we memorialize him, it should be with his hand outstretched finger to the wind, because that is how he makes his decisions. And 2017 is a dark and dangerous political time. We don't need people who are merely interested in following the latest poll numbers representing us in office. And I don't think that that's what the people of the 6th congressional district are hungering for. They split their ticket in 2016 between Kaufman and Clinton, largely because they expected Hillary Clinton to be elected as the next president of the United States. That didn't happen. And I think that a lot of people have buyer's remorse now.
I think Democrats, I don't know where you are, Sam, but one of the challenges, in my opinion, will be making these connections between the Republicans in these kinds of districts that sometimes separate themselves, maybe with a tweet from President Trump, who remains immensely unpopular, versus showing, through their voting record and through the general inertia that the GOP has had for some of the things we have seen from the administration, that they are one and the same, or that you can't simply, cut that tie so easily. And I think Democrats, not just you, but around the country, are going to really have to make that case in powerful fashion, because I still think there are many Republicans who are willing to say, well, President Trump is different than my representative or my senator. And I don't think that's the case, really, because they are enabling the president. And if you don't like the president, you can't say they are not culpable in some of what's going on.
Yeah, let me just put something else out there, Julian, which I think another way that I can differentiate myself is having a real vision of what the future of this economy is going to look like. Aurora and the 6th Congressional District more broadly is, as I mentioned before, a microcosm of America and the American economy. And we are about to confront some really serious challenges when it comes to the American workforce. One of the biggest challenges, it's a set of challenges, are what I call consolidation and automation. And consolidation is the migration of economic power from Main Street to big box stores like Walmart and Target, to online retailers like Amazon that are removed and largely unaccountable to the people who are utilizing them. They don't pay taxes in the same way that traditional brick and mortar retail does, and they don't provide jobs in the same way that traditional brick and mortar retail does. The second trend that I think that we need to prepare for is automation. And that is the increased presence of robots and computers doing jobs that we used to consider uniquely human. Those are things like self-driving cars or, more mundanely, self-checkout aisles at grocery stores. I've spent my life in technology, and recently I've spent a lot of time working with these specific technologies. And I think together with this message of economic opportunity, we need to present a message that says, look, we understand that the economy is changing. And if you don't have someone who is going to fight for you in Washington, there is a very real chance that you're going to end up with the short end of the stick. We're going to make sure that doesn't happen.
And so your opponents in the primary, so like there's this guy, Jason Crow, he's a war vet. You're talking about technological disruption. If you're trying to get people excited, whether they're Hispanics, this largest Spanish-speaking population in the 6th District, or other people who might be threatened by these technological changes, what are you going to tell people in the primary that's going to make them want you versus an Iraq-Afghanistan veteran?
I think that this is a hard issue to talk about in primaries because there are very real differences between the Democrats who are running. But Democrats also get very nervous when we speak ill of each other or even just outline the clear differences in policy between ourselves and other Democrats. One thing that became pretty obvious during the candidates forum we had 2 weeks ago is that I was the only Democrat who was willing to stand up and promote universal health care in as many words. I think that it is important that we don't beat around the bush when it comes to our policy priorities. We need to stop hedging for the general election, and we need to tell Democrats what we believe in, why we believe in it, and provide compelling economic and political and moral arguments that support those priorities.
So you're running from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party.
I guess that's one way to put it.
Yeah. Do any of your opponents speak Spanish?
They don't. And I think there's something that's even more profound here, Sam, which is that I've spent my entire life living the values that I believe in and that I'm fighting for. My career has been one that was focused on clean energy and building a stronger economy through innovation. And some of my opponents have not had that same experience. One of them in particular has had some real challenges in the election already because of his client base, working for payday lenders, working for companies that were involved in fracking, working for embezzlers, and other companies that were really involved in rigging the system against the very people that we're trying to represent.
I think. Are we talking about Jason Crow?
Yeah, we are. We are talking.
Okay, all right. Just checking because he's the one who does regulatory compliance, so it sounds kind of like him. All right, just making sure we understand where we're at here.
Right. So I think that gets to my point on integrity. We need to focus on the issues that matter to our constituents. And I think that there's a difference between nitpicking over individual morality like we did with Bill Clinton and playing in gotcha politics and drilling down to the fundamental values that make us Democrats. I think it's extraordinarily dangerous to put up a candidate who doesn't live by those values and who has made their career working against the people that they now want to represent.
Let me ask. I had a different kind of question that interested me, in that one of the things that strikes me these days is how many people are, and not just in the university setting, are upset about what's going on in Washington. And so that will range from Democrats who are deeply troubled by the Trump administration or the Freedom Caucus in the House to Republicans who are frustrated with Washington. You always hear a lot of complaining. But what's striking to me always is how few people do anything. They like to tweet. They like to yell at their television screen. They like to give you some commentary via an email, but they don't do anything. And I remember after the election, Sam and I had the founders of Indivisible on, and they were interesting. They were students here. One had been in my class. Ezra, I knew him pretty well. And it was interesting to me to watch someone kind of move into that step that I am not just going to say there's a problem. I'm going to really get involved. And Indivisible has obviously been a pretty striking example of the kind of change a small group of people really can cause. And on healthcare, I think they've been pretty formidable in blocking the repeal and replace. And you're interesting too in that you were on a different trajectory and you have decided, and I asked this a little earlier, to get involved. And I'm curious, speaking not about why you did it, but speaking to other people out there who might say, maybe I should get into politics, or maybe I – what's your experience been like? What are some of the real challenges, Levi, in getting out there and becoming an actual candidate running for the district? It's been a pleasure to observe this, but I'm curious from your perspective, how does this happen, and what's your advice to other people thinking about something like this?
Well, first of all, there's a reason that outsiders like myself don't generally jump in and run for Congress, because it's a huge organizational undertaking. You have to build a big, complex series of connections over a relatively short period of time. That's hard to do if you don't already have some sort of a network in place. And so for me, I think it's a little bit less intimidating than it might be for your average Joe, because I've started companies before and entrepreneurship is kind of in my blood, but it's still a really hard thing to do. A big part of that is raising money, which is just a massive part of what any political candidate has to do. If you look at the fundraising in our district, this is already the most expensive race at this point in the cycle of any congressional race in Colorado history. And that is just, it is a huge and daunting hill to climb. Again, I've raised money previously as an entrepreneur to fund my technology startups. So it's probably something that sits a little bit better with me than it might with your average Joe. But this is a very different kind of fundraising. I mean, you are sitting on the phone all day long, calling people you've never met before.
You spend a lot of time doing that?
A huge amount of time doing it. Unfortunately, that is just part and parcel of what you have to do to compete in the 6th congressional district. So that's a real challenge. And then I think the final thing is moving beyond the clicktivism, you know, the net activism that we see on Facebook and on Twitter and other things like that, into more organized social action, where you're actually taking that energy and you're corralling it towards specific political ends. And I would say that that's even more than marching in a protest. The protests are good. They are useful. They bring people together. They get people excited, and they provide a sense of unity. But at the end of the day, you need a much more focused political effort if you're going to affect change to the system rather than just pushing back in some broad social poll-driven way against the system. And I think that is the hard thing, getting all of those people together and channeling them towards some productive ends, because that means that people have to show up at a physical location, or sometimes not. They have to be on time. They have to coordinate. All of that takes people and effort, which generally requires money, unless you have an extraordinarily devoted set of volunteers. And that is the essence of building an organization. And that is a big part of what we're working on right now in the 6th Congressional.
And let's see, I'm looking at your family background. You have a lot of siblings.
I do.
And like a lot. And
how many do you have?
I have, well, altogether we're 10 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
We have an adopted sister who was an undocumented immigrant. So my parents couldn't actually officially adopt her, but she grew up with us because her mother passed away of cancer when we were kids, and my parents sort of took her in and raised her as one of their own. So
your immediate family, I guess. Your immediate family could field both sides of a touch football team. Okay, so this is pretty serious here. And you've got some high-profile siblings. So how is everybody about you doing this crazy thing of running for Congress and being on the phone all the time and putting away the inventor and putting on the guy with the integrity in Espanol?
Well, initially, I think my mom was very worried. I had a company that I had founded a couple years ago that was going quite well, and I was really enjoying the work that I was doing. But it became much harder to enjoy that work after Donald Trump was elected president. My heart wasn't in it. I felt like I wasn't going to feel like I was rendering service to society in the work that I was doing on renewable energy and artificial intelligence and automation when Washington was coming apart at the seams.
Who's going to do that? That's important work. So here you are going to go be like a foot soldier in the House of Representatives. That's degrading work. You just pull the lever when it's time to pull the D lever. How's that going to go?
You know, I disagree with that. And I think that that's another part of what I bring to this race that perhaps is not as pronounced with the other candidates. I'm a very independent thinker, and I'm not going to just pull the D lever. I am going to be a policy leader on some of the critical issues of our age, whether that be environmental issues or issues surrounding artificial intelligence and automation and how they're going to impact social contract that government has with business and labor. I think we need people like that in government. And even though it takes a long time and it's hard work to get something done in Congress, if you're willing to dig in and commit yourself to a fight that doesn't take an election, doesn't take a year, doesn't take a decade, but may take decades, you can do some really phenomenal and transformative things. So I will just say that my mom was not thrilled about it at first. She's now completely supportive. But it's taken a while to get her there. I have, as I mentioned, 10 brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins who have all been incredibly supportive. Though it does take some convincing when you are starting something that is completely new and that you haven't done before and that you are kind of being a little bit of a cowboy, right? That's what I'm doing here. I haven't worked my way up through the city council and the state legislature and am now running for Congress. I am coming right at the problem that I see as the clear and present danger to our society and to our country, which is Donald Trump. And the way to do that is to get elected to Congress. And that's a lot to bite off. But I have to say that all of my brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins are now completely in my corner. And after a couple of months of seeing what we did on the campaign, they were excited about it. They are excited about it. And they are a huge resource. Right. They're super smart. They're super engaged. And they're very insightful. So I do feel that they're kind of my secret weapon.
I hope some of them are registered in the 6th District.
That's right.
A couple.
You got a quorum right there. Right?
Yeah.
You grow up with that many siblings, it's no wonder you're comfortable both in a primary and you'd be comfortable in Congress. You're already used to kind of competing for your space.
That's true.
Well, listen, we're actually out of time, and I think it's a nice place to end the conversation. We wish you luck. This is a big undertaking, and we, Levi Tilleman, we wish you luck in your run for the 6th District in Colorado, and in entering the career of politics, which I actually think is something that is urgently needed. We need people out there at this moment in American history to take elected office seriously. Levi, again, is the author of The Great Race, The Global Quest for the Car of the Future with Simon and Schuster. But right now, he is a candidate running for office in Colorado. So check him out. And Levi, thanks for joining us.
Great talking to you guys.
And we'll be back soon on Politics and Polls. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Politics and Polls, a podcast series produced by WooCast. This podcast is intended to be informational only and does not reflect nor represent the views of Princeton University or the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs.